This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, should the SEC actually break away and have their own playoff in college football? Plus, the bad news for running backs like Christian McCaffrey moving forward. And we'll continue to hang with you leading up until coverage of the Gamecocks' first game in the SEC Conference Tournament. It's been pushed back. Coverage was supposed to begin at 1:15, so if you were tuning in, getting ready for South Carolina baseball, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer because of some weather and delays in the first game going on. Now seems as if coverage will not begin until closer to 3. And we'll be with you until then, whenever we get ready for South Carolina baseball. And don't forget that you have a chance to save a life on Thursday. A blood drive going on at Cruz Chevrolet this Thursday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. You can sign up today at redcrossblood.org and use the sponsor code CRUZ. Walk-ins are welcome, but they prefer you make a reservation online, an appointment. Redcrossblood.org, use the sponsor code CRUZ, and all donors will not only help somebody out by giving blood and helping to save a life, but you'll also receive a complimentary certificate for an oil and filter change, tire rotation, and more. Blood drive going on Thursday at Cruz Chevrolet, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. in North Charleston. Appreciate Cruz. I'll be over there later on. They'll help me get out of town today as I have to head up to Greenville for the Southern Conference baseball tournament that the Citadel will be participating in tomorrow. No Morrow Midday Show tomorrow, and then we'll go from there. I'll probably be back on the air Thursday regardless. It's a whole thing because of weather. Right, the Citadel, if they win their first game, they were supposed to then play Thursday, Friday. That still may be the case. But I guess there's some bad weather in the forecast in the upstate for Thursday. So now the conference has been considering taking Thursday's games, moving them to Wednesday. Therefore, the Citadel would actually start the whole tournament at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And if they win, would have to come back later in the same day to play what would be their second round game. And then we'll play on Friday. It's a whole thing. We're still figuring it out. So we'll see what happens, but I don't think it's become official yet. But I believe Citadel Baseball will start things off tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. So we have Gamecock Baseball coming up here, right here on ESPN Radio at some point this afternoon as they'll take on Florida. And then we will have Citadel Baseball starting their conference tournament tomorrow, most likely at 9 a.m. But this is what I was ranting about to start the show. Right, that you can't really count on anything when it comes to baseball because of weather. You know football, basketball, it's you set the schedule, that's what it is, you know it's going to be there. It's like, you ever have a favorite TV show, and they always move it around, back at least when you used to watch shows on cable, and it used to be every Thursday night at 9, and then maybe they move it to 8 o'clock, and then now it's on a Wednesday, and then they move it over to a Sunday, and it's like, man, all right, that's not good, especially before the days of DVR. It's not good to try to build some sort of audience. You're moving around the show, and they have no idea when they can watch their favorite show. It's always being moved on them. Similar when it comes to baseball and these conference tournaments. And I can only imagine what the conferences and the decision makers are dealing with. It could be a disaster. What a headache. Trying to get 4 games in one day. You got weather to deal with. You're trying to play all these games, you know, a tournament over the next week. Got a lot of games to try to play. And there's no guarantee that they're going to start when they're supposed to. It throws everything out of whack. So whenever these games are played, we'll have them for you here on our network of stations. Clemson gets underway tonight. We'll have that on our sister station. So got plenty of baseball going on these next couple of days. South Carolina, they need some wins. They got to make some noise in Alabama in the SEC Conference Tournament. Trent, I imagine you're you'll be pulling for Florida against the Gamecocks.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, Luke, I was telling our great Bobby Harton that I would hate if the Florida Gators eliminated the South Carolina Gamecocks in the first game. That would really put a damper, you know, on my mental space. So I hope it doesn't happen. But, yeah, cheering hard for the lads, obviously. They're going to go get it done.
Florida's going to jump out to like a five. They're going to score five runs in the first inning. And Bobby is going to come flying into the parking lot over here with pie in hand to throw into the face of Trent. If Florida early on puts the Gamecocks on the ropes to try to end their season. We also were anticipating, once we get off the air, also paying off that bet of pieing Trent today. But we'll see how things go because that may not be until 8 o'clock tonight, depending on when South Carolina actually gets going in Alabama. Hey, I saw friend of the show, Cole Kublik, had this tweet. Struck me to my core. He said, just finished season 3. We'll get back to the SEC in a moment. But Cole said, just finished season 3 of Who Killed Sarah on Netflix. Possibly the worst show I've actually completed. Never more excited to just be done watching something. For some reason, my wife and I felt the need to power through. Well, I can relate to that last part. I've shared this before, and we've talked about like bad movies. I can't turn something off. I'm, in that sense, a completist. There's something, the wiring within me, I just don't feel right. It like causes anxiety if I don't complete something like that. If I have a routine, right, it's like a little OCD of me, I guess. Like I have to make sure I finish all the same things within a day. It's very odd. So with a TV show or a movie, same idea. Like I can't just finish in the middle and turn it off, even if it's an awful movie. But I take offense because Who Killed Sarah? I actually enjoy that show on Netflix. Now, it's a Spanish-speaking show. It's a Mexican show. I always say I think it's best. You got to watch it. I don't like reading subtitles, but that's better. And now I don't know how Cole watched the show with his wife, and a lot of people in the comments also were hating on this show. I enjoy the show. Season 3 just came out. I'll be honest, each of the three seasons, right, it's gotten gradually worse along the way. But that's a fine show on Netflix. I will stand up for the show Who Killed Sarah. But you got to watch it in Spanish and read the subtitles because when you do that overdub, it takes you out of it. Not the right voices. It doesn't match up. The translation also isn't perfect. It makes it seem like a real corny show. That's why I couldn't get into Squid Game. I tried to watch that with like the dub over voice. It didn't feel right. It didn't match the show. It was very odd. But Who Killed Sarah? That's a solid show on Netflix. Now, earlier we were talking, speaking of Netflix, Trent is going through the final episodes of Ozark. And I was having this conversation with somebody. And with it being Tuesday, I was also considering trying to put together a top 10 list. But that could be difficult. But ending a show, ending a popular show is always hard to do. And I don't know if Ozark, I don't know if they stuck the landing. I'm not sure. I've got mixed reviews from my friends who've watched it. Some liked the ending, some didn't. It was okay. But away from Ozark in other shows, like Seinfeld is historic for not only how great of a sitcom it was, but most people hate the finale of Seinfeld. I don't hate it as much as most people. Most people hate the ending of The Sopranos. As a fan, I can understand hating it. I think as a writer, I thought it was a great ending. The ultimate cliffhanger. The Office. Trent, I know you're a big Office guy.
Absolutely.
What'd you think of the final episode, the ending of The Office?
Well, you know, we've had this conversation before, Luke. Season 8 and 9 of The Office was rather disappointing. Rainn Wilson had to carry that show on his shoulders. I mean, as we know, Andy Bernard, you know, Ed Helms tried to do a good job of being manager towards the end there. I know you're not a big fan of the Robert California character.
Right.
I'm blanking on the lady's name who owned Saber at the time. I'm blanking on her character name, but she did well. I don't know, the last couple episodes, though, I got a little sad, you know, when they were all in the office. Creed was playing the guitar, singing, because you knew it was an end of an era. But I didn't like the last two seasons. That's right. Just it. Yeah, you know, it's same thing with Parks and Rec. The last couple seasons, it's like, all right, yeah, you know, what are we doing here? We're kind of, all the ideas are out the window.
Yeah, I've made it now to the final. I just started the final season of Parks and Rec.
Ooh.
But we've talked about this before. Yeah, already I could tell it's not quite the same show by the last two seasons.
Office and Parks and Rec seasons 2 to 6 are the prime time seasons that you need to tune into.
I agree. I was looking at this article on BuzzFeed. They actually have Parks and Rec as nailing the final episode.
Whoa.
So once I get to the final episode, I'll have to make a determination. But my point in all this being is that usually when you have a good show, it's hard. Like, is there a good ending to any good show? Because I think it's an impossible task because you're just upset that your show is ending. So it's hard to please you with the grand finale. and maybe you're looking for a happy ending and you don't always get it, like The Sopranos, right? It was just the ultimate cliffhanger. You didn't even know if it was a happy ending or a bad ending. You didn't know what happened. It ticked a lot of people off. In fact, when that happened, I remember watching that live with my parents on the couch on HBO that Sunday night, way back when. That was like 15 years ago. And when the screen went to black, right, everybody thought that there was some sort of issue. HBO probably fielded a lot of calls. Like, what happened? HBO blacked out. You cut out on my screen. And it left you so perplexed. Like, that's the ending of the show? And as a fan who invested all that time watching that show, I could understand why you'd be really ticked off by the ending when it just cuts to black. But I think for the writers, like I said, I think that's like the ultimate ending as a writer, to just end it like that. It's such a great ending with the ultimate cliffhanger. It ticks you off because it's so good. That's why you're upset, because you didn't get that closure. I never watched Breaking Bad. Did you ever go through Breaking Bad?
I saw a couple seasons of it. It didn't, you know, I wasn't as interested in the storyline as many people were, but that's one of the biggest shows, like, of all time, I believe.
Yeah, and that's one that my friends nailed the ending. So, I don't know. Breaking Bad, I guess, is one of the few.
But there's Prison Break. Prison Break's another good one as well, kind of similar to Breaking Bad back in the day. Yeah.
Prison Break? Get Prison Break out of here. Prison Break had a great first season. Prison Break, and I just, you know what, I just told you how I'm a completist, I got to finish things. With that said, Prison Break and Friday Night Lights are two shows that I loved the first season, and then I bailed pretty early on in the second season. Shows that dropped off so quick. Because I think they fit the category of almost like Who Killed Sarah, to bring this full circle back to the start of this conversation. Friend of the show, Cole Kublik, taking shots at the Netflix show Who Killed Sarah, which I enjoy. There's a lot of shows that are designed to be one season, and then because they're so popular, the networks try to stretch them out as long as they can. And Prison Break seemed like that. I mean, how many times can you have a guy bust out of prison? Right? It's ridiculous. And Friday Night Lights, same idea. Like, it just got too so quickly. It got too ridiculous. The first season was so good about high school football in Texas, and then it really cratered. It fell downhill quickly by season two.
Coach Taylor. I mean, get you one of these, son. Coach Taylor.
And Who Killed Sarah is another one. Like, great first season, second season not bad, third season pretty ridiculous, because you're just trying to stretch these things out as long as you can.
So you can't do, like, the you like the captions. If it's a show like Narcos, for example, I loved Narcos, but it was all in Spanish. Yeah. So, you know, I was reading captions for three seasons. Like, it was difficult. Peaky Blinders the same way. Even though they're speaking English, their accents are so thick that you just turn on the captions for safety purposes, basically.
Yeah, and I'm not good with accents either. I would need the captions for a show like that. No, I don't like – this is the one exception. This is, I think, the only show that I've watched that I do the captions. But if I had the choice, I'm definitely choosing captions and the subtitles as opposed to the overdub when it's clearly – not their voices, and it's not matching up. I hate that.
Oh, yeah. No, that was like your comment with Squid Game. Yep. I tried to dub it, and it was horrible. So I did watch it. It was phenomenal, but I had to do the captions on it.
Yeah. And then I don't like to sit there and read. It's not a book. It's the opposite. I don't read the books. I wait till the movies come out and the shows so I can watch them. So I don't want to then sit there, put on a show, and have to read everything that they're saying. But this was the one exception. I said, no, I tried a couple episodes with the overdubs, and I said, no, this is terrible. I got to go back to Spanish, and I'll read the subtitles. Now, I know a little Spanish. I took Spanish for 5 years, so I pick up on some things, but I'm reading those subtitles, and it's not bad. Anyways, Cole Kublik did not like it. I tend to disagree. I still have to finish that show, but certain shows that just drag on too long, and most shows, just they're too hard to end. That's the message in all this conversation. As Trent gets towards the end of Ozark, maybe he'll have a different opinion of mine. But other shows, too, The Office, Seinfeld, Sopranos, pick your favorite show. It's impossible, or nearly impossible, to have a good ending to such a great show. And maybe just because, simply, you don't want it to end. Anyways, the SEC has their SEC meetings coming up. And, of course, the big story will be Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. But coming up, we're also hearing these ideas, theories. Maybe it's just a bluff. But the SEC potentially trying to go their own way and have their own playoff. Is this a good idea? Is this something that should actually happen? We'll get to that coming up. Justin Thomas also took a shot at Jimbo Fisher. We'll get to that as well as we wait on Gamecock baseball eventually starting at some point this afternoon. Now, to take you behind the curtain, Gamecock baseball, originally the coverage was going to begin or supposed to begin right at this time, actually, at 1:15. That's no longer the case because it has been the first game of that tournament has been delayed. So instead, we'll be hanging with you until first pitch. But before I put us in an awkward spot, just want to make sure, Trent, everything good? We can hit a break. We're good to roll.
We can hit a break. Yes, we can. You know, towards the end of the show, it might get a little dicey every so often. The computer's kind of a little screwed up right now, but we can take a break right now, Luke Morrow.
Okay,
yes.
Perfect. That's what we'll do, and we'll be with you until Gamecock Baseball, and we'll figure things out along the way. Because to take you behind the scenes, right, when you have things set up for one thing to come on at a certain time, then it's no longer there. Obviously, right, the schedule changes. It's a computer program. You got to change all sorts of things. So we will navigate that behind the scenes, and we'll be with you until South Carolina baseball actually comes on the air at some point this afternoon. In the meantime, when we come back, the SEC. Should the SEC break away and do their own thing? Is this a good idea? And Justin Thomas takes a shot at Jimbo Fisher. We'll get to that as well. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention, campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Let me tell you. And it's a world that man can eat at all. When things are big, that should be small. Who can tell what magic spells we'll be doing for us? And I'm giving all my love to this world, only to be told. I can see, I can breathe, no, not where we'll be. And nothing's gonna change the way we live. Cause we can always take but never give. And never things are changing for the worse. See, whoa, it's a crazy world we're living in. And I just can't see that half of us immersed in sin. It's all we have to give. These futures made of virtual insanity now always seem to...
Coming up, should the SEC break away and do their own thing? The Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get to that in just a moment as we wait on the SEC Conference Baseball Tournament. South Carolina and Florida, the start of their game will be pushed back. Was supposed to, at least coverage, was supposed to begin at 1:15, the game at 2 o'clock Eastern time. But due to some weather issues and delays in the first game, that game will now get underway a little bit later. So we'll be with you until the coverage begins for South Carolina and Florida. And boy, does South Carolina, could they use some victories this week in this tournament? More specifically, Mark Kingston could use some victories. Now, before we get to the SEC and the SEC meetings, we were talking about a TV show's last segment, as we often do. And I was talking about how so few shows actually nail the ending. On the text line, and you can always text the show, 843-608-1734, Texter said that the last season and final episode of Bloodline on Netflix was garbage. I agree. Now, that stars the same actor that was the football coach in Friday Night Lights, which is what Kyle Chandler, I think, is his name. And he was the main character in Bloodline. And that was another one that I think checks both boxes, where not only was the ending pretty poor, but also that was one of those shows that I just think was designed for one season. And then it went well, and they said, like, all right, well, let's keep doing more. And that was... about Bloodline first came out in, I think it was 2015, because I remember where I was when I was watching it. So that was fairly early on in, like, the Netflix becoming a big-time giant in original programming. They were coming out with great shows. And nowadays, Netflix really cuts shows real quick. Like, very few shows get more than three seasons. I think Bloodline was only three seasons. But that was one of those that it was one season or supposed to be, and then it was, like, so successful, they said, all right, let's continue this thing. And they did, and much like Who Killed Sarah currently on Netflix, each season just got worse. So I agree with you on the Bloodline. Checks both boxes. Ending wasn't great, and also just one of those that seemed like it was better if they just did one and done. Kind of like I always say, that's what they do in England. The Office, the original Office, one season, that's it. Successful show, they said, we don't care, we're on to the next thing. Here in the States, we drag on our shows as long as we can because people are going to tune in, you're going to make money off of it. But Bloodline, great first season and great cast. I love Linda Cardellini, Ben Mendelsohn. Anything he's in, I'm watching it. He's fantastic. Sam Shepard, Sissy Spacek, whatever her name is, Spacek, whatever her name. She's got a new show. Anyways, the SEC has their SEC meetings next week. Now, the big focus is going to be Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. Is anything going to come of that? Are there going to be more fireworks between these two when you get all these SEC schools together? But we've gotten this report, this idea, this story floated out in the last 24 to 48 hours about the SEC at least considering breaking away and doing their own playoff. A couple of thoughts on this. Number one, I said when we first got news of Texas, Oklahoma joining the SEC, and this idea that because of the number of teams in the SEC, there'd be 16, you're going to have to go to four-team pods. Would make the most sense. This was the idea that we've had once we expand the SEC even further, which also goes against this new idea of getting rid of divisions. We'd be adding even more divisions with these four-team clusters, call them pods. But my idea at the time was, boy, wouldn't it be great? And I know we'd be getting into playing probably too many games. But if the SEC, for their own conference champion, if you took the best team in the four pods and you had a four-team playoff within the SEC just to crown the SEC champion, and you take four teams with you to wherever, play the games in three different sites if you want, play them all in Atlanta, wherever you want to be. And on one Saturday, you have the semifinals, and then you come back the following Saturday with the SEC championship. It would be great. Now, you know, you're adding another game, and we're already adding more games, and soon they're going to be playing even more games than the NFL. College football will, with the extended playoffs and more games in the regular season and now adding another one to the postseason play. But that would really be a lot of fun to take the four top teams in the SEC and have a two-round tournament to crown the SEC champion instead of just the one game. Well, this is kind of that same idea, except instead of crowning the SEC champion, they would just be essentially the national champion. Because the SEC, right, is the best conference in football. And so there's this idea, and maybe rightfully so, that they don't need anybody else. And on paper, it can make a lot of sense. The SEC wins the majority of the national championship. I mean, we've had three different teams from the SEC win the last 3 years. It's not even the same team. It's not like it's Alabama dominating. You get Alabama, and then you have LSU jump up, and then now you have Georgia get over the hump. And if you're a college football fan, especially an SEC fan, right, you may think, like, oh, the best team in the SEC is just the best team in the country. We don't need these other schools. And you're probably right. We could crown a champion pretty much just fine without most of the other schools. Clemson fans would have a problem with that idea. Ohio State fans would take exception. Maybe now USC fans with Lincoln Riley believe they'll be in the conversation. Oklahoma fans, so on and so forth. But obviously the national championship has been dominated by the SEC. This past year, the national championship was both SEC teams. You could get away doing something like that. But here's why I would warn against it. Here's why I think it wouldn't be good for college football. Is because college football has already become too regional of a sport. You know, the western half of the country doesn't have much reason to care or much interest. I grew up in the Northeast. It's all about the NFL because there aren't enough good teams. The closest team in the Northeast that is worth anything, right, is probably Penn State. And even that is in the middle of nowhere in Pennsylvania. It's far removed from, you know, the tri-state or New England. But otherwise, you have no other schools in that area that are worth paying attention to. Down here in the Southeast, of course, college football is huge, and rightfully so, because all these schools are really good, and the SEC is really talented, and a ton of talent come from these states. But college football is already regional enough. Now imagine if you cut off all those other areas as well, and it simply just became the SEC has their own playoff. That would leapfrog, or that would outdo any other attempted playoff. Like if all the other conferences then combined and said, fine, we'll go do our own thing. You know, like, good luck. People will pay attention. We'll watch. But, you know, the SEC would dominate the clash of different championships. But college football still needs these other areas. Like, I think it's great that Mario Cristobal's in Miami. I think it's great that Lincoln Riley's at USC. Oklahoma, hopefully Venables keeps them relevant. They're joining the SEC anyways. But you need the interest in other parts of the country. It's why when you have, like, a touring musician or comedian or anybody that tours, they try to go to all parts of the country, right? Especially if you're popular enough. If you're the Rolling Stones, you go to all portions of the country because you're popular enough that you have fans there. But it's also important to get yourself in these different markets and maybe potentially build even more fans. You don't want to just be known in one area. It's like if you're starting out in a rock band and you start off as a local band and people know you in the bars around your city. Then you try to become more regional, and you branch out, right? And you spread your wings, and you're traveling to the bordering states, and you go on a little bit of a minor tour, a little road trip, and play in some local areas, surrounding states. And then eventually, when you hit it big, you're able to tour the country. Because, yes, A, you have now more fans in different parts of the country, but also, B, it helps with the exposure to branch out. And college football is the same way. And that's why they tried to have the national championship out on the West Coast a couple years ago, and maybe it didn't go over great. But I think it'd be a bit of a fool's errand to just completely cut off like three quarters of the country and say, all right, the SEC, we're going to do our own thing. This is essentially going to become the quasi-national champion, and it's only going to pertain to schools in this portion of the country and X number of states. Even if the Northeast isn't really relevant to college football and the West isn't all that relevant in recent years to college football, and even the North outside of Ohio State and, you know, Michigan last year, hasn't been overly relevant to crowning a champion. Even if that's the case, you still want these fan bases, these portions of the country, to think they have a chance and therefore to be interested and intrigued. College football is already becoming too regional, and boy, would that be, that really be, you know, sucking the oxygen out for that sport in most portions of the country. If you simply just said, all right, SEC, we're going to go do our own thing. We're a good enough conference that our champion is going to be the most valuable champion. Doesn't matter what everyone else is doing. And college football now becomes a sport that only applies when it comes to crowning the best champion to a number of states. Wouldn't it be great? Now, would this actually happen? I don't think so. I think it's more of a bluff. I think it's more of a reaction to college football, for the meantime, not expanding their playoff. And so the SEC is trying to use some of the power. But as we head to the SEC meetings, these are the first SEC meetings in a couple of years. And while everybody will be thinking about, focused on, talking about Jimbo and Nick Saban, there are some other important issues as well, such as something like that. That idea floated out in the last couple of days, and we'll see if there's any sort of traction. Anything comes from the idea of the SEC just breaking off, doing their own thing, having their own champion, and we know that that champion would become the most important. This past year in the national championship, it was an SEC title game. Georgia against Alabama. And boy, was that game more entertaining than watching Cincinnati play Alabama or Michigan playing Georgia. The SEC doesn't need a lot of help from the other schools or conferences, but college football still does. You can't just completely cut it off and have the SEC go do their own thing when they have the best football in the sport and make the sport even more regional to just the southeast portion of the country. Wouldn't it be great for the sport? Right? If you're a successful rock band, you don't say, like, all right, I know everybody loves us and we had a successful tour throughout the country, but now we're only going to play in the Northeast. And all those other fans you have are going to be ticked off and they never get to see you. And that's how you lose fans. That's how you minimize. You always want to be growing, not shortening your fan base or your demographic or your capabilities. And that's what college football would be potentially doing. Now, I think this is just more of, just an idea. I don't know how much has been put into the thought or how serious it is, but I think it'd be a bad move if you had just the SEC breakaway do their own thing. Wouldn't it be great for college football? With all of that said, Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship over the weekend. He's an Alabama guy, played at Alabama, and following his victory, he was on Sirius XM, and he took a shot at Jimbo Fisher, this whole Saban versus Jimbo thing. We played the clips last hour of Jimbo Fisher still fired up, defending himself against Nick Saban's claim. Here was JT with some taking a jab at Jimbo following his win the other day.
For our rule, maybe I'm not sure what Jimbo Fisher's rule is, but I guess he's.
I can't get out of here without asking an Alabama-related question. Nick Saban has a 24-hour rule.
Mm-hmm.
How long is the Justin Thomas celebrate the PGA Championship rule?
Yeah, I got a 24-hour rule. Maybe I'm not sure what Jimbo Fisher's rule is, but I guess he's got to win something first before he figures out his rule. So I don't know. I'm playing next week, so we'll enjoy it. But at the same time, you know, we're in the middle of a very, very big stretch of this season. So it's great to be able to spend this time, you know, with my team, but it's back to work.
Justin Thomas taking the shot at Jimbo, going out of his way to bring up Jimbo Fisher and then saying he's got to win something first. Now, to be fair, Jimbo did win a national championship less than a decade ago. But it wasn't in the SEC. It was with Florida State. So if you're an SEC guy, really, who cares about that, right? That's the thought. I'm sure Thomas is thinking more about Jimbo's reign at Texas A&M, where he certainly hasn't won much there. Right, hasn't won the conference, hasn't been to a playoff. He's won some bowl games, and he's won his fair number of games. He's 34 and 14 at Texas A&M. But that is the idea with Jimbo, that, you know, for Texas A&M, they've kind of underachieved. They were 500 in the SEC last year. That was a huge disappointment. They need to be better this year. And maybe that's part of the reason why Jimbo's had such a hard response to all this, because he's already feeling some of the pressure. He's just sick and tired of people talking about how they're not winning enough and how he's underachieving. And this isn't Florida State and the ACC. The SEC is a whole other animal. And he's sick and tired of hearing about it, and now people are coming at him for, you know, paying players, and he's just overly sensitive because he's feeling some of that pressure. He's just tired of people saying he hasn't won enough at Texas A&M. But this year, for a number of reasons, is big for Jimbo and Texas A&M. Nice little jab there from Justin Thomas, but also evidently forgetting that Jimbo has won a national championship. Say what you will about Jimbo Fisher and the job he's doing or not doing at Texas A&M, but you can't take away that national championship. And then, you know, followed it up the next year, 13-1, losing in the Rose Bowl. They had a pretty good run there for a couple of years when he was the head coach at Florida State. Things didn't end great. Things haven't been great at Texas A&M. But from 2012 to 2014, I mean, they were one of the best programs in college football, led by Jimbo. But as they say, right, in the SEC, it means more. And when you're not winning in the SEC, that means more, evidently, than winning a national championship with an ACC program. We're waiting on Gamecock baseball coming up. Coverage will begin later on this afternoon after things have been delayed in Alabama. Everything's been pushed back. So usually around this time, we get to Trent's Takes. Now, today we weren't expecting to be on the air at this point. So, Trent, allow me to put you on the spot. You have some takes? You got some things on your mind?
Absolutely, Luke. You know I always come prepared. I was grinding the takes this morning, and I got some juicy ones.
Perfect.
Don't you worry, sir.
Perfect. And we'll get to that when we come back, as we wait on South Carolina baseball in the SEC Conference Tournament. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Said goodbye. Now I'm back and not ashamed to cry. Ooh, baby, I am fine, still delivered. I'm yours. Ah! Here I am, baby. Oh, oh. You got the feeling to get the game. Ah, here I am, baby. Ah, you got the feeling to get the game.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Gamecocks baseball coming up at some point, we assume, in Alabama in the first round of the SEC Conference Tournament as they take on Florida today. The first game of the tournament is in a second rain delay, Alabama-Georgia, in only the third inning. So wait around, wait patiently. I believe, I think Alabama, the 11 seed, was winning 5-1, I believe, against Georgia, and they're in another delay. So we'll see when South Carolina and Florida get going. We'll have it for you whenever it happens right here on ESPN Radio. Now, coverage for that game was supposed to begin at 1:15. Instead, here we are, which gives us an opportunity. We didn't think we'd get to do this today, but instead we get to find out what's on the mind of the producer as it's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, before I get into the disappointing performance from the Miami Heat, I would like to point out something that happened last night. Now, I do one of these meal delivery services where it helps you, you know, learn how to cook. I'm not a great cook. Now, on the Blackstone, on the grill, that's a different story. I can grill up a steak, burgers, whatever you need. But all the tedious work that goes into making a nice meal, I wasn't too fond of. I'm not a fan of that, Luke. But I decided, you know what, I need to get better at cooking, so I have this meal delivery service. And last night, Luke Morrow, last night, I made an Italian dish. And can I say, I don't know if it was really Italian, but it felt Italian. There was pasta, there was mozzarella, there was Italian seasoning, there was all different kinds of stuff. Took me about an hour to make this, Luke.
Ooh.
And I tell you what, if I did a 23andMe right now, there's potentially I have a 0.01% Italian in me, and I don't want to offend any of the Morrow family or anybody, but Luke, I might, somebody in my family might have danced with the boot at some point long ago, because that meal was phenomenal, and I'm eating it again because these delivery services,
yeah,
they send you two serving for two. Obviously, I was cooking for myself last night, so I have it waiting for me at home. I absolutely love it. There might have been a dance with the boot at some point, Luke. Might have been a dance with the boot because it was dang good. I cut up the tomatoes, made the sauce and everything. It was awesome. It was great.
Yeah, impressive. Now, this is what – so I don't do much cooking. I do very basic things in the kitchen. The old joke my father always used to say about me, I can make one thing, reservations. I don't cook. So, point being, you tell me an hour to get the meal ready, yeah. I'm immediately out. I'm too hungry. I want to eat right now. I don't want to eat. That's my whole problem. The cooking, the cleaning, I just want to – I eat. It takes me – I'm a quick eater. It takes me 5 minutes to eat, and it's like, oh, shoot, an hour.
Yeah.
But you sent me a photo of the meal, and it looked good. Made my mouth water. The real test, though, you said you got a lasagna you got to make, right?
Yes. Yes, I have a lasagna.
Okay, so now this is probably the big test.
Yeah,
we have to see how the lasagna comes out. And if you nail that, we'll welcome you truly to the family.
Well, you know, I love that I'm getting closer to being a local paisan. Right. Now, I don't even want to take a 23andMe because there's zero chance I have any Italian in me whatsoever. But I like to think in my mind that at some point there was some Italian lineage in my blood because, I mean, I was in the kitchen like nobody's business. Grandma Fazzolini, that's me, Luke.
That's
you know what I'm saying? It was unbelievable.
Did you have – you got to have like to really play up the stereotype. You had to have, like, some Sinatra in the background.
You know, I was thinking about it. I was listening to pregame coverage of
okay,
the
all
NBA
right,
game.
That's fine.
Just doing my job.
Yeah.
You know, Luke, just staying up to date. But I will say I had a glass of red wine with it, and it was very good. And I'm not usually a red wine guy, but mixing it with the Italian, meal, it was unbelievable.
You got to do it. Whenever I have pasta, that always puts me in the mood for a little wine as well.
Yeah.
So, job well done. The photo looked good. I'm very curious to see how the lasagna comes out next.
Yeah, we'll see, Luke. We'll see. We might get to that next week because, I got a barbecue bacon burger in this meal as well, this package as
well.
That
sounds good.
Yeah, it's only about 30-minute prep time, so I'm pretty pumped up about it. I got to get my oven situated because my oven keeps catching on fire for some reason, and the maintenance people haven't come and fixed it yet. So I got to get that working out because the oven's the oven's on the back burner right now. And I had to, you know, I couldn't even use it to bake the mozzarella over the chicken. I was very disappointed with that, so I had to use a pan. And you were talking about the cleaning, Luke. I had four different pans going, you know, on the stovetop. Took me about 45 minutes to clean. Luckily, the heat were getting blown out in the background, so I had an excuse to clean, so I didn't have to watch that pitiful performance. Speaking of pitiful, Luke Morrow, Max Strus, this entire playoffs, has been phenomenal. Undrafted guy, goes to Chicago for a year, is now with the Miami Heat. Last night, he started the game, Luke. By the way, no starters were over 10 points for the Miami Heat last night. Absolutely abysmal. Jimmy Butler had 6 points, didn't cash the 24.5-point over. Thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate you. But Max Strus last night, the first 0 point, 0 assist, 0 rebound, 0 steal, and 0 block game with 15-plus minutes played in the last 3 playoffs. He didn't record a single stat in 15-plus minutes playing, and I believe he played 20 minutes, Luke. We're talking Heat culture all week, you know, how the boys need to stay in shape. That was embarrassing last night. I don't want to get on my Stephen A. soapbox, and every single game is embarrassing for the other team, but that was embarrassing. I hope going back to Miami gives the boys a little life. They're back, hit the club the night before, you know, do your normal thing, but last night was embarrassing. Luke, Jason Tatum, when he plays like that, I agree with JJ. Hey, he might be a top 10 player. But then, you know, the game before, you know, 6 turnovers, 10 points.
Yeah.
You can't get a read on the guy. But when he plays like a superstar, it's unbelievable. But I think the difference between a great player and a superstar, night in, night out, I think about, you know, last year, the Brooklyn and Milwaukee series. Even though Brooklyn lost the series, Durant put up 40 points every single game because he had to do it. That's a superstar. Jason Tatum, same thing with Jimmy Butler. I wouldn't call Jimmy Butler a superstar because he'll score 41 night in game one, and then last night he scored 6 points, only took 7 shots. What are we doing, Luke? That's the difference between the great and the superstars. I think Jason Tatum's a great player. Jimmy Butler's a great player, but they're not in that upper echelon of, you know, the top 5, top 10 guys in the league, in my opinion.
I agree with you. They're just too inconsistent, and that's the difference. Tatum shows that potential and that flash. I think that's why people love him so much, and J.J. Redick will call him a top 8 player because you can see what he's capable of, but he's got to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
He's had too many down games this playoffs. To be a star or a top 8 player, you got to be relied upon night in and night out to carry that team, and he just hasn't done it enough. He did it last night. He does it when they need him most. I'll give him that. You know, I'll give him that credit.
Yeah.
After a loss, he comes back in a big way. Game 6 against Milwaukee, last night to even the series. But he's got to be more consistent. Now, in this industry, we can be very hyperbolic. You mentioned Strus. I don't know if it's an overreaction to say that's the worst playoff performance we've ever seen.
Yeah, especially for a guy, Luke, who has been performing incredibly well throughout the entire playoffs. He was a role player, now he's starting. Tyler Hero, what are you doing?
He was out. The Heat were outscored last night by 33 when he was on the floor, and he played 15 minutes. So he did not get a single stat. He had three fouls. He went 0 for 7, and the Heat were outscored by 33 in the 15 minutes he played. That is almost more impressive than it is, like, sad, right? I'm almost impressed by how bad of a performance. How can you play 15 minutes, not have a single stat, and get outscored by 33 points in 15 minutes? That is brutal.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that we've relied on the entire playoffs, and maybe, you know, no wonder he was an undrafted guy if he's going to put up a triple zero. A triple zero or a quad, whatever, cinco zero. I don't know what you want to call it, but it's unbelievable, Luke. Also, I have a quick note here. What's the trend going on with these quarterbacks in the NFL getting absolutely yoked? I don't know if you've seen the picture recently of Justin Herbert. He looks like he's, I believe the number is 245 pounds right now. Justin Herbert, he's 6'6". Josh Allen, saw a picture of him at the softball game. 250 pounds, looks absolutely yoked. And now we're getting reports from the Patriots camp that Mac Jones lost basically his entire belly and is getting yoked. What is the deal here? Is it because the defensive ends that are coming into the league now are just so athletic and also massive? You look like a guy like Trayvon Walker, Jordan Davis, you know, Kayvon Thibodeau. And I know there's always been absolute freak athletes, Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, you name them, in the NFL. But it seems like year after year, we're getting about five or six guys, Aiden Hutchinson, that are coming in that are 6'6", 270 pounds, and can run a 4.5. Is that, do you think that's the reason why these quarterbacks are like, all right, I got to put on 20 more pounds of muscle? Or I also thought, like, with Justin Herbert and Josh Allen, not Mac Jones, obviously, they both have wheels. So maybe right. In their offense, Josh Allen, you know, was running a lot of quarterback powers last year. So I understand why he's putting on more weight, especially if that's going to, you know, be a part of their offense. Justin Herbert can move as well. So I wonder if the Chargers are kind of being like, all right, maybe we can use you kind of like a Josh Allen, where you have about 6 to 10 run attempts that are designed quarterback runs per game. And maybe that's just an extra element to the offense for the Chargers. It's kind of confusing to me right now, though.
Yeah, and I also think part of it also is like the investment, right, with how much you're investing in these guys. Back in the day, the quarterbacks were either also, you know, not as valuable or important, and also weren't making as much money. So, like, Terry Bradshaw could show up with a little bit of a beer belly, and drink, you know, and you could have Super Bowl III, you know, like Len Dawson smoking cigarettes at halftime in the locker room. Now, Justin Herbert, like, you know, they have millions of dollars invested in you. You are the franchise. Mac Jones, like, they got millions of dollars invested in you. You're the franchise quarterback right now, the New England Patriots. You better show, like, that you care and that you're in shape and you're going to be able to make it through a season and not show up with a little bit of a, you know, the beer belly, the boiler that Mac Jones had going in Alabama. So I think that's part of it, too, is that even if it doesn't make a difference per se on the football field, it makes a difference just in terms of, like, this guy cares, he's motivated, he's interested. We invested so much in him, he's invested now as well by training and working out. But it is a good point. Like, Tiger Woods changed golf, where now everybody on the golf, you get your Brooks Koepka and even a DeChambeau and these guys that are workout warriors and can really bomb it down the fairway. And Tiger is credited as starting that trend when he really started to hit it, you know, working out wise.
Right.
And now, as we talked about the other day, Tiger is looking ripped out there despite his health issues he's dealt with.
You could tell, like, it just, like, the Nike shirt's a little tight. Yeah. Like, you look at his chest, and it looks like Myles Garrett. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know. Maybe because he couldn't work out legs for so long, the guy was just crushing 350 on the bench, you know, every single day. I'm sure that was a part of the workout. But it is crazy to me, Luke. Speaking of one side note, did you see Aaron Judge, the picture of him holding the water bottle by chance?
Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, he had the hands of Shaq. It's unbelievable. And question, you watch more baseball than I do. Is he the front runner for the MVP right now? 17 home runs?
Yeah, he has to be.
Yeah.
17 homers, I think 34 RBIs, and they've played like 40 games. He's on pace to have, I saw the numbers the other day. He's on pace for like 60 homers, 160 RBIs, and the Yankees have the best record in the AL. So that's the other big piece, right? He's the best player on the best team right now in the AL. It pains me to say it. I hate the Yankees. And boy, it's his contract year. Boy, did the Yankees screw up by not giving him that contract, because he is going a few months from now, he is going to demand tons of money. It's going to be the largest contract I imagine in baseball history next offseason.
They were saying, I think I was following it on Twitter because I was so fascinated after the picture, so I started reading up on more on Aaron Judge. I obviously know who he is, but they're saying $400 million will be the price tag for Aaron Judge.
Yeah, I'm sure. And by the way, he's already 30, right? That's what the players have fought against in baseball. Like, he's going to hit free agency for the first time when he's almost 31, which is so different from the other sports. That's what the baseball players really hate. But he's going to get paid this offseason. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you're trying to think ahead, if you were tuning in hoping to hear Gamecock baseball by now, we're waiting. And we'll continue to wait because the first game has been a delay. They're hoping to get underway, Alabama and Georgia, at 2:20 Eastern time. And then they still have to finish their game. So if you're waiting around for Gamecocks baseball, it could be a little while. They start their conference tournament this afternoon at some point. We believe it's still going to take place as they take on Florida this afternoon. So if you're a game – excuse me, losing my voice. My voice checked out at 1:15. If you're a Gamecock fan waiting for the conference tournament game, it's going to require some patience today. We'll be with you at this point probably like a normal show. We'll probably be with you all the way up until 3 here on a Tuesday before hitting the road for the Southern Conference baseball tournament with the Citadel getting underway tomorrow. Coming up in Hour 3, still more to do. The concern for running backs like Christian McCaffrey here moving forward. Plus, we'll get back to the NBA playoffs. Maybe we'll even come up with some sort of top 10 list as we often do on Tuesdays. And an interesting Phil Mickelson anecdote as more information comes out on what Phil's been dealing with over the years. Hour 3 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.